Here's Andy Udman.
Here's other ones. Race teams. Runs for pediatric cancer. 46 mothers shave their heads for childhood cancer awareness. Well-meaning good people. On and on and on. Getting Big Pharma to treat childhood cancers. ABC News. How about we talk about why the cancer is increasing instead of talking about fighting it once you get it?
Well, he's a loudmouth and he's very controversial, and he taps into the fear that so many people have about the drugs that they take for their various ailments. What's worse, the ailment or the drug? Andy Udman is my name. The show is London Today, and it is Thursday. Let me check, 10 o'clock. That must mean Pam Colleen is in this morning, and she is in studio. Hi, Pam. How are you?
Good morning, Andy. I'm fine.
We're going to rock the boat again this morning?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
On the issue of?
Well, what we're going to do is, actually, we're just waiting for Alan Castles to call in. He's in Toronto visiting, and he's from British Columbia, but he is the co-author of Selling Sickness, How the World's Biggest Pharmaceutical Companies Are Turning Us All Into Patients. And his new book is called The ABCs of Disease Mongering. And basically, he teaches drug policy out at University of Victoria.
Now, this is an article. His article was in a Reader's Digest, mm-hmm. and we focused on that a few months ago. And there's some rather startling figures in that article about how many drugs we take. And that call, that phone call that we had that day, and I hope that gentleman is listening this morning because I'm wondering how he's doing. The gentleman who called and had 25 different medications mm-hmm. in his mm-hmm. cabinet and couldn't pronounce half the names, was taking them all, couldn't remember what some of the pills were for. We're clearly over-medicated.
Oh, we're definitely over-medicated. And it's really not helping the quality of our lives. And when we look at even the drug ads coming in from the United States, the direct-to-consumer advertising, the drugs that were approved in the United States, I think back in 1997, the pharmaceuticals' justification for these ads to, you know, educate us about their wonderful products were supposed to improve the quality of our lives. And yet, since the inception of those ads in the United States, we're far sicker than we are today. So clearly those drugs have not improved the quality of our lives.
And all indications are that, especially with a number of these vaccines coming out, that there's now almost a frame of mind that for every new disease, we need a new vaccine, and you want to be protected against everything. So it's like you should go into your doctor once a month or once a week to get the latest vaccine. And suddenly you're a walking chemical factory.
That's right. And they want to create, vaccines for laziness, for crying out loud. They're developing a vaccine for cocaine addiction. I mean, the list goes on. And if the people who are in power, who make money from these vaccines, have their way, they would be vaccinating us thousands of times, for thousands of illnesses.
All of that being said, Pam, I want to ask you this question. Reading this article in Reader's Digest earlier this year, let me give you some figures. In 2005, Canadian seniors ages 60 to 69 took an average of 35 different prescribed medications. I'm just trying to absorb that. 35 different medications in 1 year, while those aged 80 or older took an average of, okay, this is where it just leaves the planet mm-hmm. of reality, took an average of 74. And I wouldn't even have believed that until our friend called and started taking those bottles out of his medicine cabinet, one after the other, after the other, after the other. And in 2008, approximately 62% of all elderly Canadians claimed to be taking more than five different types of drugs at once.
Yeah. No, it's terrible. In the United States, over 50% of the population is taking at least one prescription drug. And of course, as you know, the numbers keep getting worse as people get older. And rather than, teaching them about proper diet and lifestyle, or actually not just teaching them, but modeling it and doing incentives out in society to make sure people are being compliant, they're just handing out these drugs like they're candy. And obviously it's detrimental to us. I mean, look at how many people are struggling today. You may help somebody with a heart disease problem, but eventually the treatment for one disease leads to another disease, or duct tapes the problem that they may be having things like depression going on in their lives. So the quality of their life is gone. They may be functioning at 10% of the quality of a life that one deserves. So, it's all relative.
While we're waiting to hook up with Alan Castles, I want to invite our audience to just share with us how many medicines you have seen in a filing cabinet, whether that be of your mother, your father, your uncle, because surveys do show, Pam, this is, I think, rather amusing, a little upsetting, too, that when someone visits your home, there's a high percentage of cases where they snoop in your medicine cabinet. I don't know why, but they do. They snoop in your medicine cabinet. So if you're one of the snoopers, what have you found in a family member's medicine cabinet? How many kinds of medications? And while we're on the subject, Rick Perry running for president of the United States. This story is starting to blow up in his face about having been helping to clear the way for Gardasil.
Well, having ties to Merck, yes, yeah.
And now seeing the deaths and some of the horrible medical results from taking Gardasil that we're now seeing in some of these young women.
Yeah, and the, you know, there are girls dying after getting injected with this drug. There's a lot of other adverse events happening because of this vaccine. So, you know, we have to sit back and question whether or not the cure is actually working, because it seems to be causing more problems than good.
643-1290, we invite your calls about the number of medications. I don't know if you saw that Reader's Digest article, but again, in 2005, Canadian seniors taking 60 to 69 taking an average of 35 different prescribed medications. I'm sure none of them live in London, Ontario.
Oh, I'm sure there's lots here.
35. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with your calls and Alan Castles when we come back in just a moment here in London today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Here's other ones. Race teams runs for pediatric cancer. 46 mothers shaved their heads for childhood cancer awareness. Well-meaning good people. On and on and on. Getting Big Pharma to treat childhood cancers. ABC News. How about we talk about why the cancer is increasing instead of talking about fighting it once you get it?
Alex Jones. Tell us about Alex Jones, Pam.
Oh, he's a big name in the conspiracy world. You know, he's been growing. His audience has been growing for years and years and years. He started off with radio. Now he's got audio and visual. So, you know, he's got probably one of the largest listening audiences in the world in that domain.
Well, he's very entertaining and he's a loudmouth, but there must be some substance to what he's saying and his suspicions about Big Pharma that is attracting such a huge audience.
Essentially, what he's doing is he's taking the fallout from mainstream media. You know, a lot of these stories you cannot get on mainstream media. You know, they tend to, in mainstream media, they tend to stroke the powers that be in terms of the food industry, the drug industry, and so on. And when you have something that goes against the grain, when you have information that goes against what mainstream media is saying, it's very, very difficult to get that information out there.
It's incredibly sad and disappointing to me that we constantly hear about these stories that the mainstream media won't carry. I'm part of the mainstream media, and I welcome different points of view. I always say to my listeners, I love it when you agree with me. I love it more when you disagree with me. I want all the voices to be there, but apparently not all the mainstream media is that open-minded. I get a daily email about, let's see now, and I'm trying to think of the exact name, but the latest one, this is from Natural News.
Mm-hmm.
Natural News. Now, this is the kind of report that you're probably not going to hear in the mainstream media, and that's why I love having you on. Maybe I don't always agree with everything you say. You're an alternative voice, and I love to hear it. But here is the latest email from Natural News. Reports are still streaming in of girls in Texas as young as 9 years old having outbreaks of genital warts, going into convulsions, becoming paralyzed, slipping into comas, and even dying after being force-vaccinated by the highly controversial HPV vaccine Gardasil. If that is true, why aren't we hearing that in mainstream media?
Well, I mean, you look at who the sponsors are for the mainstream media, and you'll see why. I mean, it's very difficult for them to say anything negative against their sponsors. And if and when they do something like that, of course, they're threatened by their sponsors. The sponsors start saying, oh, you know, we're not going to pay for our advertising any longer. I mean, this happens across the board. I know a lot of people who have tried in the mainstream media to get the truth out, and they are reprimanded. They're censored.
That's hard to believe.
It's
That's
the truth.
Absolutely. When I think of, you know, and I watch ABC every night, I watch Global News, and I'm just trying to imagine these reporters living them with themselves.
Jane Akrey. Jane Akrey is a great example. She did a documentary on Monsanto's bovine growth hormone and went through hell. She and her husband, Steve Wilson, went through hell to get the truth out about the bovine growth hormone. And Monsanto threatened Fox. She was working for Fox at the time, and they threatened Fox, and they said, you know, we're going to pull out all of our advertising if you air this about bovine growth hormone. She did her research. She dotted her I's. She crossed her T's. And she and her husband, Steve, unfortunately, you know, went through hell beyond that in the courts in particular.
Well, it's absolutely frightening to me that we are taking medications prescribed by doctors who, as you have said, are too busy to read the literature and the research, whether it's vaccine for girls in grade 7 to avoid cervical cancer, whether it's fluoride in the water, make the case for the fact that we're not getting the truth on so many of these important
Well, there's
measures.
A lot of assumptions here. There's assumptions that people are not going to do the work to be healthy, right? So doctors, of course, get frustrated because people come in and they know their diet and lifestyle is terrible, but the doctor assumes that the person isn't going to change their diet and lifestyle. So the talk just doesn't happen. The education doesn't happen. So we are programmed to believe that there's a silver bullet, and we think that we can have a quick fix. Just taking a pill is going to solve all of our problems. This has been well ingrained in us, in society, for decades. And so we have these assumptions that are actually interfering with the proactive nature of doing diet and lifestyle.
And yet I find it so hard to believe. So I'm just going to throw this out. 643-1290, weigh in on what Pam is saying. We're just not getting the truth, whether it be about Gardasil, whether it be about fluoride, so many other absolutely key medical issues. Are our mainstream media, have they been bought off by Big Pharma? Do you believe the likes of Alex Jones? And I'm going to just get Ryan to play a second clip of Alex Jones on this whole issue of cancer. Do you buy into the conspiracy theories like those of this man?
Oh yeah, the molecule makeup of most of the chemotherapies is basically different variants of RAID pesticide. Here's other ones. Race teams runs for pediatric cancer. 46 mothers shave their heads for childhood cancer awareness. Well-meaning good people. On and on and on. Getting Big Pharma to treat childhood cancers. ABC News. How about we talk about why the cancer is increasing instead of talking about fighting it once you get it?
643-1290, if you want to weigh in on this issue of whether we're getting the truth through the mainstream media or whether the mainstream media has been bought off by Big Pharma. Chris, what do you think?
Well, you know, I have the same concerns you do as well as whether the drugs are making people sicker than, you know, than they should be helping them. I'm 46 years old. When I was 42, my doctor put me on Lipitor because I had a high cholesterol. And I consciously took myself off of it about 2 years after that, because I thought, if I have to keep going in for liver tests to make sure it's not affecting my liver, and I could potentially be on this drug for another 40, 50 years, I hope, you know, what is it going to do to my body over that period of time? And I have no history of heart disease in my family, so I thought, you know what, why am I, you know, taking this chance? I mean, what's your comments on that, Pam?
Well, actually, what you should do is go back into my archives when Andy and I interviewed Dr. James Carlson, and we talked about what's really causing the cholesterol problem in the first place. And that is that we're just consuming too much sugar, too many carbohydrates in general. It's the carbohydrate consumption, the excessive amounts of carbohydrates that we're consuming that are basically elevating or disproportionating the good cholesterol and bad cholesterol. So if you go into my archives on my website, you'll hear that interview with Dr. James Carlson, and he's really just saying, you know, prevention is the cure. And, you know, his research as a biochemist is saying, you know, there are no suppositions or theories or beliefs systems at large here. There's pure facts scientifically. And what we've made a mistake in believing over the last 50 years is this low-fat lie. And I call that the multi-trillion dollar lie that has led to you know, people being prescribed statin drugs unnecessarily and us not learning the truth about the real cause behind this cholesterol issue. And that is that we're just consuming too many carbohydrates from the beginning.
Chris,
I've adjusted my diet to eliminate the carbohydrates as much as possible. It's hard to eliminate them completely.
Yes.
Chris, let me just ask you. I mean, it takes a lot of chutzpah. It takes a lot of spine and character to go against what your doctor told you looking straight into your eyes. How did you work up that courage?
Well, he's not happy with me, quite honestly.
No.
And so it makes it difficult to go see him for other things because he's, you know, he thinks I should be on the drug and I'm doing myself harm. But, you know, it was, I'll be honest with you, it was a gut feeling that I went on as mm-hmm. opposed to, you know, it just didn't seem right to me. And it didn't seem like I was going to get the benefit and that I may be putting my body in danger another way. So
if
I went with my gut.
If you want to email me, I'll send you all sorts of references about the cholesterol myth. And, you know, there's a group of scientists around the world that are basically challenging that entire theory about cholesterol. And there are doctors coming on board every day now, basically, that are saying, you know, this idea, this cholesterol theory from the beginning was fraudulent. It was based on very, very bad science.
Okay, that'd be great. So I could just go to your website and I get your email address there?
And I'll send you the references. And they're growing all the time, these references. So, you know, there's that more and more. And the reason why the references are growing is because the doctors are sick themselves and they're starting to question the theory.
Excellent.
Chris, hats off to you for having the guts to do your own research and not just blindly accepting what your doctor tells you.
Great. Well, thank you.
Okay. And I'm not saying, folks, don't listen to your doctors. That's absolutely not what I'm saying. 643-1290 if you want to weigh in on this issue this morning. Do you trust your doctor? And would you follow him or her to the death? Or would you do what Chris has done, and that is do your own research on so many of these key issues? Pam, I have a sense that while we hear from a number of people, and we heard from some of them last week, on the show the last 2 or 3 weeks, that there are people, especially these who have 25, 35 different kinds of medications in their medicine cabinet, who would follow their doctor to the death.
Oh, they believe their doctors. There's no question about that. But I think that the empire is crumbling because the doctors are not only sick, their spouses are sick, their children are sick, their neighbors are sick. They have to be questioning things right now. So really, you know, with the pharmaceutical companies and their shares are going down. People are starting to look for more alternatives. You know, I think, you know, really, it's just a matter of being around the corner in terms of this shift in consciousness that we're going to see in terms of more and more people embracing nutrition.
Well, I'm enjoying this a lot. We were hoping to hook up with Alan Castles, the author of the article in Reader's Digest, Too Many Pills, Multi-Prescription Drug Use is on the Rise Among Canadian Seniors. We'll see if we can connect with him during the break. But otherwise, this is a great chance for me to just chat about with Pam about these issues, which we haven't chatted about just in a general way for some time, and invite you to weigh in. Do you trust your doctor? Especially when you hear the doctors are so busy, they don't read all the research. Why haven't we heard from more doctors in London, for example, on the fluoride issue? Why haven't we heard from your doctor on Gardasil and some of the real dangers? What about these stories from Natural News streaming in from Texas? Girls in Texas as young as 9 years old having outbreaks of genital warts, going into convulsions, becoming paralyzed. Do you believe your doctor? Do you believe the mainstream media? Or have they been, heaven forbid, muzzled by Big Pharma because of the huge advertising revenue? We're going to take a short break for a news update. We'll be back with more. And the lines are open, 643-1290, when we come back in just a moment here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Pam Colleen in studio with Andy Udman on London Today. We're just discussing various health issues this morning. If you want to weigh in on some of the topics that you've heard this morning, we're going to move on to several more. But we're focusing, we were hoping to hook up with Alan Castles, the author of an article in Reader's Digest, on how many medicines are in our seniors' medicine cabinet. John, I'll get with you in a second. I just want to go through these figures again. In 2005, Canadian seniors ages 60 to 69 took an average of 35 different prescribed medications a year, while those age 80 and older took an average of 74, which to me, I mean, 74 medications. 74? It's totally over the top. John, does this sound familiar to you, or is this over the top?
Oh, I think it sounds very familiar, and I'm in my mid-60s and very fortunately don't take any medications whatsoever.
None at all?
None at all.
John, you should be in a museum or a hall of fame because you are an absolute rarity, my friend.
Yeah, well, I really am, you know, really do a lot of research on nutrition, and I work out, and I'm active and so on. And my question really to Pam is, it's so confusing, Pam, and you make so many good points. And I've read Dr. James Carlson, and I've read some of the Dr. David Diamond from the University of South Florida. And then you turn around, and friends of mine refer me to a book by Colin Campbell on the China study, which is exactly opposite. Like, one's on the scale of 1 to 10, one's 10, and the other is almost 0.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many...
And this is where I get so confused and frustrated, you know? You don't know... And every time you turn around... you know, I heard on your radio station the other day in the afternoon somebody talking about epithelial, which is the lining of the arteries being affected by high fat diets and so on, you know. This is where I get so confused, and it's hard for me to change, you know, and even though you make such good points.
Well, I understand your confusion. I mean, I sat in your shoes for many, many years. I remember I'm a recovering vegan. I did it for 9 years. And back in the 1990s when I was a vegan, the information that is coming out now wasn't available. And right now what I would suggest, I mean, again, if you'd like to send me an email, pam@pamkaleen.com, I have references to rebuttals to the China study, to the recently we just had it at Highland, the movie Forks Over Knives, people like Denise Minger, who have done incredible research to counter their information to show just how flawed their information really is.
Interesting.
Yeah,
John, can I just jump in? I'm so fascinated by the fact your age again is
65,
and you take how many medications?
None.
Like, as in zero?
Zero.
How do you account for your extraordinarily good record when it comes to good health without medication?
Well, it's just, I guess, my lifestyle. You know, I'm active. I'm not overweight. You know, I enjoy walking. I enjoy being outside, you know. And as I say, I try to eat lots of fruits and vegetables and things like high in antioxidants, you know, that type of thing.
Wow.
But I don't... I have to profess, you know, as I said earlier, Andy and Pam, that it's really confusing. It's really frustrating because you're from the old school, and you hear when you go into the doctor, he tells you this, and then, you know, this all this new research. It's hard to make an about face.
That's
no,
right.
No question about it, John. We really appreciate your call. We have to move on. We have we are going to hook up with Alan Castles in just a moment. But Diane, you wanted to make a comment.
Yes, you asked if you trusted your doctor, and I do, because my doctor's like a family member, and when I go in, I believe she treats every patient the same way. And when we talk about something, she's advised me against going on different things. You know, you've heard friends being on something, and they've touted it and said how good it was. And she will, you know, always caution me that way. And another thing, I go to the same pharmacist. He owns his own business. And he does tremendous research, and if I have ever been giving a medication for any reason, even by another specialist or that, he will caution me, and sometimes he'll advise, hey, you know what, maybe you shouldn't be on this.
What about this article in Reader's Digest by Alan Castles suggesting that the average Canadian senior, 60 to 69, took an average of 35 different prescribed medications? Can you imagine any doctor having their patient on 35 different medications in 1 year?
Andy, I had a great aunt. She's deceased now. But when she used to go to the United States, she had to have her prescriptions with her, and she literally took a shoebox. And when her family doctor, who was into his 70s, finally retired and a young gentleman took over his practice, he got her down to like maybe 10 medications instead of like 27.
Hmm.
He said that they were these other ones she had to be on because she was almost on like having kidney failure. But I really blame everybody who's listening on the radio right now for your own health, because people that are overweight, I don't know why doctors, like even my own doctor has never said to me, really, you know, you're overweight. I know I am. I'm working on it. I am on high blood pressure, but I've gone from 2 pills down to 1 because I'm watching what I've put in my mouth.
Diane, we have to run because we're going to hook up with Alan Castle.
Right.
How many medications in your cabinet?
I take 2 that I have to. Thyroid, you have no control. And the blood pressure medication, my husband, 65, takes nothing.
Okay, that's great. Diane, great to hear. Okay, we're going to squeeze Robbie in before we go to Alan. Go ahead, Robbie.
Yeah, hi. Well, I would just like to say that it seems our healthcare system is basically a pimp for Big Pharma. We're spending $4 billion a year in Ontario alone on medical prescriptions. It seems that if the medical community seems to think that for every kind of illness there's a pill to cure it. Another big problem is the antibiotics that doctors are shoving down young children's throats for every conceivable malady. And the other big problem with our system is the Ritalin that they're giving all these kids. Like, it seems that grade school is now about the three R's. It's reading, writing, and Ritalin. And, you know, I used to be in the medical business a little bit, and I've personally known people that are taking 18 and 20 different pills a day, and sometimes they have to take two or three of them. It's just gotten way out of hand.
That's right.
Wow, it's almost like you've been reading Alan Castle's article in Reader's Digest. We're going to lock you in, Robbie, because I want to hook you up with Alan, if that's okay. Sure. Alan has been listening to this. Alan, good morning.
Good morning.
Alan, it sounds like some of these people have been reading your article. Pimp, our doctors, some of our doctors are a pimp for Big Pharma. Do you want to write that down before we get into our conversation, or have you already used that line?
Well, I don't think I've ever actually used that line, but, you know, I certainly agree with the sentiment. You know, there's far too much, you know, ill-advised prescribing happening. You know, when you look at the sheer numbers of drugs that seniors are getting, you know, it's appalling. Children... you know, the rates of prescribing around ADHD drugs has been growing rapidly, and we're trying to figure out, you know, what exactly is happening there. And again, it's the quick prescription for, you know, behavioral difficulties in classrooms.
Okay, hold that thought. Robbie, I appreciate your call. We're going to take a short break. When we come back with Alan Castles, who's also a great poet, by the way, we're going to ask about these numbers, which sound ridiculous, about the number of medications in our seniors' medicine cabinets. But Alan has a little booklet of poems which make his point. Let me read you one. I love his poetry. Reggie's legs are restless, all twitchy in the night, but his wife saw several TV ads for a drug to make them right. She walked him to the clinic to ask for some relief, and he got a quickie look over. It had never been so brief. The doctor also knew the drug and quickly wrote a script. But next time, Reggie's wife says, the clinic he could skip. She knew his troubles all along and saw the right commercial. Self-diagnosing illnesses? Why make it controversial? We'll be back with Alan Castles in just a moment here in London today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Your local drugstore. Are they promoting good health or promoting?
Drugs.
Or promoting drugs.
Pushing drugs, actually.
Pushing drugs. That is the question. We're in conversation this morning with Alan Castles, co-author of, listen to this title, Selling Sickness, How the World's Biggest Pharmaceutical Companies Are Turning Us All Into Patients. Alan Castles, we were hoping to hook up with you earlier, so we have a limited amount of time. Make your case. It's a stunning article you had in the Reader's Digest about we have become so dependent on prescription drugs, especially our seniors, the numbers in your article. I just can't believe.
Yeah, you know, and this whole issue of multi-drug prescription in the elderly, it's been a serious issue, I think, for probably 20 years or so, and the numbers just seem to be getting worse. You know, you have lots of stories of people who, once their elderly parent gets a little frail, they end up in a home, and next thing you know, they're on 12 or 15 different medications, and things tend to go downhill from there. You know, we really are... over-prescribing and using way too much prescription drugs.
Now, the issue is that it's compounding. So you take one or two drugs, there's side effects from those drugs, then you have to take other drugs to cover up the side effects of the other drugs. I mean, this is basically how it sort of compounds, right?
Well, exactly. And certainly with the elderly, I mean, a lot of these drugs have never been tested in older people. So really, when doctors are prescribing, they're really not sure what's going to happen. And, you know, older people with... kind of slower metabolisms, a lot of times the drugs stay in their system a lot longer than in younger people, and things can build up to toxic levels.
Yeah. Alan, I love the habit my doctor has, and I don't know if other doctors do the same thing. Whenever I come in, he says, bring all your meds along.
Yeah.
And so when I walk in and I don't have any meds, he goes, well, where's your meds? And I say, I don't have any, and he looks me in the eye like I'm lying.
Yeah, you know, it's, you're probably an outlier in terms of not having to take anything. But, you know, it's probably an indication of your general good health, right?
Now, you mentioned drug testing. Now, are drugs really properly tested, or are we just all guinea pigs out here in this big experiment?
Well, certainly they're tested to, in some cases, a great extent, but in really specific populations. So a drug which gets tested, you know, say an antidepressant gets tested in 6 to 8 week trials, people end up taking these drugs for years and years. So we really don't know, you know, sort of what the long-term effects are of those. And the trials are just never long enough, right?
Alan, let me ask you about your numbers in the Reader's Digest article. You're saying that in 2005, Canadian seniors aged 60 to 69 took an average of 35 different prescribed
right.
medications.
So let me clarify that. It's not as bad as it sounds. So if you get 4 prescriptions and you get them filled every month for a year, that would be 30, you know, that would be what, 48 prescriptions. So when they're different prescriptions, but they might be the same medication. So and you know, the numbers there don't seem actually as bad as how I'd written it there. I want to clarify that.
Well, no
really
kidding.
For the older, like, so we're talking people 80 or over, you know, they might be taking 74 prescriptions on average per year, and you know that's an awful lot of a lot of medication in an older person.
When was it your article was in Reader's Digest?
It was last March.
Okay, when it came out, we did a piece with the editor of Reader's Digest, and we had a call from a gentleman who, when we were inviting our listeners to do this, to go to their medicine cabinet and pull out their medications. We had one caller who pulled out; he had 25,
and I
just, my jaw just dropped as he pulled out one bottle after the other and struggled with the names of them all, didn't really know what they were all for. How typical is that?
That's very typical. I mean, you look at how they dispense drugs in, say, long-term care facilities and old folks' homes. They use these bubble packs, and, you know, it's almost like they end up eating more drugs than they do food.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's only 1 to 10% of adverse events that are actually recorded. Most people don't associate necessarily their adverse events to their drug taking. And every year in Canada, there are about 10,000 deaths due to drug problems, taking properly prescribed drugs.
That's right.
So really, the numbers are rather conservative in the grand scheme of things.
Well, for sure. And we actually don't know the real extent to which people are suffering adverse events from drugs. But we do know, for example, that an adverse reaction to a prescription drug is about the fourth or fifth leading cause of death in Canada, you know, ahead of many other things that we're much more concerned about. And really, it's the kind of thing that the authorities, both in Canada and the U.S., have really never been serious about, you know, reporting adverse effects. In fact, I would recommend to all your listeners that if you ever have any serious adverse effects related to a drug, you should make sure that gets reported. You know, talk to your doctor or your pharmacist and ask them to make a report to Health Canada.
Absolutely. And the Ontario government, to their credit, has just issued some more funding to help pharmacists spend time with their patients to recognize those situations. Gary, you have a thought. Jump in.
Just my thought is that you know, people are living longer these days. It's probably because of all the drugs that the doctors give them. I suppose the doctor's in a kind of a dilemma. He has to choose between the person having a longer life or what their lifestyle is going to be.
Well, Gary, let me ask you this. My take on that is, are people really living longer? My research has shown that the biggest progress we've made is not in people who are older, but in children surviving their early youth.
Right. 100 years ago, of course, the infant mortality rate was at 50% or so. We were far more likely to die from infectious diseases 100 years ago. So if you remove the variables that killed us 100 years ago that don't kill us today, if you did some number crunching, mm-hmm. you'd discover that we're actually not living that much longer.
Gary, how many pills in your medicine cabinet?
I just take one. I take Lipitor, and I've taken it for probably 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably that one's okay. I think that is one that will make you live longer.
Gary, I appreciate the call. Back to Alan Castles, co-author of Selling Sickness, How the World's Biggest Pharmaceutical Companies Are Turning Us All Into Patients and the ABCs of Disease Mongering. No Christmas card from Shoppers Drug Mart for you, Alan.
No. In fact, the Christmas cards from the drug companies really stopped after those books were published. It's funny you should mention Lipitor, because the first chapter in Selling Sickness really is about the whole phenomenon about cholesterol lowering. And in fact, I think the essence of our book is captured in that first chapter, where we look at created cholesterol into a disease that needed to be treated. And clearly the major trials, the guideline writers, you know, the major trialists and researchers around cholesterol, all funded by the pharmaceutical industry, have really sort of pushed the whole cholesterol paradigm to, I would think, absurd lengths. So you hear, you know, people 80, 90 years old being prescribed cholesterol-lowering drugs. I mean, the effects of these drugs are really, really very marginal. For people who have not had a heart attack or have no heart disease, the effects are probably non-existent.
And the side effects, can you...
There are real harms related to taking cholesterol as you, cholesterol-lowering drugs, as you know.
Right. Can you talk about some of the side effects so people might be able to identify them?
Well, the most common side effect is muscle weakening or joint pain. I mean, this is probably 25 to 40% of people who take cholesterol-lowering drugs experience these kinds of muscle pain, sometimes unable to get out of bed or to stand up. If you're started on a cholesterol-lowering drug and you have any muscle pain, you should talk to your doctor right away. You know, this is a precursor to something that they call rhabdomyolysis, which is a breakdown of your muscles. And
but the heart is a muscle, Alan, and we're trying to treat the heart here. So that sounds very counterintuitive, doesn't it?
Yes, you know, we're treating though an essential substance in your body. Cholesterol is essential for life. In fact, you know, some of the studies that haven't been funded by the pharmaceutical industry has shown that older people with higher cholesterol, it actually has a protective effect. You know, the thing is, there's probably, you know, 8 to 10 million Canadians taking cholesterol-lowering drugs. I would venture to say that most people really have no understanding of what kind of benefits.
Alan, we're almost out of time. What is Big Pharma's agenda?
Well, clearly they're a big business, a very successful business model, and in my opinion, to keep that model going, they need to influence anyone and any agency that has any control over making decisions about drug approvals, about drug information, about what your doctor thinks about prescribing. And so they invest billions of dollars in convincing doctors, patients, regulators, and so on that their products are essential and necessary.
Some would say there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that, but what you need when you've got a big, powerful business like this trying to convince you of something, you need independent information, you need independent experts, and you need people who can take an objective view of the benefits and harms related to these drugs. Right now, so much of our drug information is skewed by the influence of pharma. Mm-hmm. And, you know, though a lot of our thinking is influenced by the actions of large companies, though when it comes to our health, we think, or I, you know, myself and my co-author Ray Moynihan would say that if you don't have objective, independent information, then you're only getting half the picture.
Alan Cassels, we appreciate so much you joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Alan. Yes,
you have a couple of events coming up this weekend.
Yes, I have a book signing in Guelph, Ontario on Sunday at Stone Road Mall from 1 to 5 p.m. That's at Chapters.
And your book again is?
And my book is Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic. And on Saturday, I start my boot camp, my nutrition boot camp, where I teach the work of Dr. Weston A. Price. And I talk about the traditional foods and how they influence both our physical and mental health.
Folks, on the other side of the news, health-related, raw milk. Raw milk. Is the farmer who's pushing raw milk getting a raw deal? Convicted, guilty, Michael Schmidt. Pictures in all the papers this morning. Michael Schmidt will join Pam and me on the other side of the news in just a moment. And then later in the hour, texting and driving. Finally, we're waking up. Front page story in the Globe and Mail today. We'll talk to a couple of the key players. When we come back in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.